everybody, and welcome to another edition of the NFL Roadshow with lots of moving parts all of a sudden. After a slow month or so in the news department, we've got a lot happening this week with training camp in full swing as of Tuesday. Every single team in camp and ready to hit the field today. Woo! Before I get to the biggest news about Aaron Rodgers reporting with a special guest uniquely qualified to offer perspective on that, there are a few more things worth mentioning, like the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. reported to camp in Cleveland healthy. He passed his physical. He will not start camp on the PUP list. That's the physically unable to perform list. So he's good to go and will collect a $1 million bonus as a result. Good for him. Gus Edwards in Baltimore, not healthy for the start of camp, apparently tested positive for COVID, so he will miss the first 10 days. So we're back doing those updates again. Which brings me to an interesting press conference that Ron Rivera gave on Tuesday, acknowledging frustration. I think the actual words he used were beyond frustrated about his team's vaccination rates, which are the lowest in the league at 60%, according to the Washington Post. For comparison purposes, Tom Pelissero is reporting that 85% of the players in the league have at least one shot. So 60% is way below the average, though it is much higher than where the Washington football team was back at the beginning of July, when only 37% of their players were vaccinated. To me, it's interesting that this particular team is so low. And frankly, I think the whole thing's pretty interesting. Like, why are some teams heavily vaccinated and others aren't? Right? Because we all know that just in general, there are regional differences in our country, in the general population. But football teams are made up of people from all sorts of different regions. So I'm really curious as to why some teams' numbers are high and some are low. And that brings me back to Rivera. Because one possible reason could have to do with leadership, right? And prioritization. Maybe how they've discussed the vaccine with their players, how they've chosen to apply pressure or not. But Rivera's comments were pretty strong. He brought up his cancer battle from last year, saying that he is immune deficient, and he hopes that players can understand that. He doesn't feel comfortable not wearing masks around, specifically, he mentioned people who were unvaccinated. He feels like that's risky for him in particular. He mentioned the competitive disadvantages that a team would be in if they ran the risk of losing players to COVID in the season. He went through all of that. Talked about the lack of a paycheck that was on the line for everybody, not just the person who missed the game because they had COVID, but players on both teams will miss out on paychecks if games have to be canceled because of forfeiture, because of a COVID outbreak. That's the new NFL policy that was announced recently. So it was a very different message than some of the messages that we have heard elsewhere from coaches who have seemed like they were trying very hard not to take a position. He said that he wouldn't tell anyone on his team what to do, but that it was very clear that his position was that it was in his team's best interest for players to get vaccinated. That was obvious listening to his comments. So I'll be curious to watch their numbers and see what that kind of message does to those numbers in the next few weeks. Maybe it won't do anything. Maybe this is completely unrelated. Again, I'm just spitballing. I have no idea what the low numbers and high numbers are tied to. I think it's just really interesting. And I'll talk to Andrew Brandt a little bit about the vaccine situation and the legal ramifications surrounding this whole vaccine stance thing in the NFL. We'll do that after, though, we talk about his former team, the Green Bay Packers, who, of course, have been the biggest story of the week so far, coming to some sort of agreement with Aaron Rodgers to end the standoff and get him to report to camp, as he did yesterday in flip-flops and an office t-shirt and a man bun and some real specific sunglasses. He looked like he came straight from vacay. According to Adam Schefter, the two sides, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, voided the final year of Rodgers' deal in 2023. They took away the tag. They will not tag him. They put mechanisms in place to address his issues with the team. I'm not at all sure what that means. They also agreed to review his situation at the end of the season. I'm not sure what that means either. And it sounds like they also agreed to go get Randall Cobb, which was reportedly one of his demands. Okay, so what exactly happened here? Because I don't know. So I thought Andrew Brandt was a good person to talk that through with, maybe figure out what we think. he has a unique perspective. As I mentioned earlier, he is ESPN's business and legal analyst, and he spent 10 years in Green Bay's front office, and he actually did Aaron Rodgers' original contract with the team. He is smart, not at all blustery, and as you know, I'm really into that. So let's break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Three.
Andrew Brandt, funny that we're talking about this subject matter on this particular day. It's a bit of an anniversary for you and Aaron Rodgers, is it not?
Hey, Lindsay. Yeah, I was. I just looked through my archives 16 years ago on July 27th, 2005. This kid from Cal walks in to sign his first contract. And here we are today returning to Green Bay for the first time this year. You know, it was interesting because that back then, here's this kind of kid that came into the situation where we had a Hall of Fame quarterback. I've told this story many times about how we picked him and how it was deja vu last 2020 when they did it again on the same day we did it 15 years earlier. So he didn't know what to expect. You know, he's never been to Wisconsin, as I hadn't when I moved there. So we bonded. Of course, we had the I'm Stanford, he's Cal, but we had a nice relationship during that time.
You got along despite the Stanford Cal thing. So this is essentially where it all ended up going, is kind of where you anticipated that it would go. And I kind of got into some of the specifics prior to welcoming you on, but I'm interested to get your take on how this was resolved, because it's being described by some as kind of a win-win for both sides. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I see it a bigger win for the Packers, Lindsay. I mean, I think going back, listen, I'm getting a lot of kudos for sort of seeing this thing. And to me, it really wasn't that hard. I mean, I've been on both sides. I've been an agent. I've been management. I'm aware that the true driver of player power is something that Aaron didn't have and most NFL players don't have, which is free agency, which is an ability to get to a position where you have options. And for a lot of reasons, which is a whole different podcast, it seems like other sports superstars especially get to that place. NBA, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, they get to that place a lot more than NFL. And the only ones that sort of get to that place of free agency are circumstantial, like Kirk Cousins, where the Washington Redskins, formerly known as the Redskins, didn't want to marry him. So they dated him a couple years with a couple franchise tags. So he got to that point. Long story short, Aaron never got to it. Aaron signed a big contract a few years ago that has him in Green Bay for 3 more years. Now that's been changed. We'll talk about that. But when you take this position that was reported that he wanted out, that he didn't like it, that all the things we heard about, what are his options? So he's under contract. If he doesn't report, he's still under contract. If he retires, he's still under contract for a long period of time, 3 years. So what do you do? And it just sort of occurred to me early on in the process that no matter how upset he was, the Packers, you know, have the rights. And more importantly, they want to make a transition in the succession plan, as we did from Favre to Rodgers, but not now. But not now. My prediction all along has been since 2020 draft, I said two things. Number one, with the selection of Jordan Love, number one, we now have an expiration date on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, which I never thought we would, even though I went through it. And that expiration date to me has always been 2022. Mm-hmm. Number two, the Packers are going to have to manage this. And it sounds so simple, but it's hard. And I did it 3 years. And I'll never forget those 3 years as long as I live, because you are dealing with a Hall of Fame player that has his agent call you all the time saying, Andrew, this sucks. You know, he's in a meeting room every day with his replacement. You know, imagine that. Everyone listening, imagine your work. You drive in, you walk in, you zoom in, and you're in there every day with your replacement.
that you literally know is your replacement, not even that you just think might be, but it's laid out for you. This is somebody we intend to take your job.
Hired yeah. to take your job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. On the other side, and this didn't happen right away, obviously, but Aaron's camp long ago was saying, is he ever going to play? Like, is he ever going to play? Like, you know, Brett, he's never going to retire. So what are you going to do? You're going to trade him or what? And so what I had to do, and I'm the agent guy at the team, because that was my background. I'm like, hey, you just got to hold on. You know, you try to be as professional and tactful as you can. You don't have the answers. And even if you do have the answers, you don't want to tell the answers.
Tricky thing here.
Yes.
I think that everyone involved now knows that that's what's happening. I think that's where Aaron's been coming from this whole time is like, I know you're just not telling me because you can't tell me, but I know what you're not telling me. So let's put it all out on the table. It's always felt like that's what he felt disrespected by. And there's no way, like, I'm not in his brain, but to me, right. just reading between the lines, that's what I felt like bugged him more than anything was that they thought he was stupid enough not to tell him.
I think he was a good soldier, at least publicly for a while, mm-hmm. like, you know, Jordan Love, whatever. At the end of at the championship game press conference afterwards, the tough loss to the Buccaneers, he's like, you know, who knows the future? And what I think he meant was, okay, like you just said, you're going to move on to Love. What's the plan here? You know, and I feel for the Packers because I've been in that seat, in that very seat. You don't want to tell them. Say you know the plan is 2022. Well, what happens if Jordan gets hurt and mm-hmm. Aaron plays MVP again? You know, what happens? Then it's like, oh, you told me 2020. No. So you don't try to tell them. But I think Aaron, in what I was reading in the reports this year, was like, hey, let's just do it now.
Yeah.
You know, let's just do it now. You know, you're going to move on to him in March. Let's do it now.
Well, from a Packers point of view, it's because we're not ready
right now.
And you're better than Jordan Love right now. And that's not in our best interest right now. I wonder if one of the concessions and the thing that brought him to the table, and again, I don't know, is if he was like, just say it. Like, you know what I mean? Because he seems like that kind of person. You've said all along, this clearly isn't about money. It would have been resolved a long time ago. It's about something else. And I wonder if it's not just like, I want you to say the words that you're going to move on from me after this year. I'll show up. We'll all do it. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to be part of the plan. Like, just treat me like with the respect that I've earned.
Well, again, spinning to your earlier question, what's the deal now and who won? I just think what we have is a void. And I suggested a void for many weeks and brought it up again Sunday in my little Twitter video, which is let's do the void, a la Tom Brady. He picks his team next year. The downside mm-hmm. for the Packers, of course, would have been, if this happened, no compensation, no trade. He just goes, like Brady. The downside for Aaron, if he was so resolute against playing, would be he would have to play for 1 year in Green Bay. It turns out, again, no one's seen the contract, but according to ESPN, he has a void for the next year.
Why? What is that?
I know. And so I'm looking at it as, oh my God, the Packers got what they wanted.
100% across the board. That's the way I read it too.
They can play him.
Mm-hmm.
And they have his MVP level play. They move to Love in March. And they get a couple number one picks. So I'm like, well, what did Aaron get? Now the reports that he's going to get Randall Cobb. Okay, I don't think Houston wants Randall Cobb. You know, so we'll see if that even happens. But here's the soft language, Lindsay, is this sort of soft language from reports about we'll review after this season, like we'll check it out, how we feel about each other. And to me, that is basically translation. We'll consult you about where we're going to trade you.
Okay.
We're going to trade you, but you're going to be part of that. That to me is how I read. That's the soft part of this agreement. Obviously, it's not going to be in writing, but. It was just this loose language that Adam Schefter reported about.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk about this year after this year. And I'm like, okay, what that means is we're going to trade him and he'll know, you know, we're not going to trade him to the Jets, you know, sorry, Jets. Right.
No offense.
We're going to trade him to somewhere he wants to go. So But, you know, again, I know everyone wants winners and losers, but yes, the Packers got what it wanted, because the way I was reading it, and I haven't been there in a while, but I sort of knew some of this, that he in God's green earth, he wasn't going back to those people.
Right.
There was a level of mistrust and maybe disgust with that front office. But I don't know. It seems like he's cool, you know, with, and again, money, you know, maybe they'll bump him up this year. That's obvious. I would do that in a second. But future years guarantees, that wasn't going to be a big deal. That doesn't matter. He don't want to be there future years. So
it's interesting to me that he just didn't push, having made this major stand, right? So that at least it looked like he was coming away with something and not just taking a massive swing and a miss, that he didn't push for the void after this year. Because if we all kind of think he's going to leave at the end of this year anyway, and it's in the Packers' best interest if they want to move forward with Jordan Love, they kind of have to do that this year so that they can get him on the field and they can understand what they have before they know whether or not to pick up his option. Why they wouldn't have just done the language for the void this year so that he looked like he had that power? Because as it is, it works out for the Packers. Like, he might still move on. He might still get to pick, but they get something in return. If he's so mad at the organization, why wouldn't he just be like, you're just going to lose me if you lose me? I don't know.
My guess is that they tried, you know, like Dave Dunn, who I know so well, done 100 deals with him when I was at the Packers. He's, you know, he pushed for outright, you know, free agency, trade now, void after 2021. But, you know, the Packers said, all right, we're not going to give you the void, but we're going to talk about it. So basically, the Packers are ensuring trade compensation.
Yeah.
Well, and listen, I have said this so many times in the last year, and no one has ever refuted me from their organization, which is they're moving to Love in 2022.
Yeah.
The plan was he was third quarterback last year. He's second quarterback this year. He's going to play of all August games. And next year, it's his team. And listen, we kept Aaron on the bench 3 years. I said at the time, it will never happen again, a first-round quarterback sitting that long. So I figured the right point is 2 years for this kid.
You mentioned that earlier, that one of the tricky things here is to manage this situation. Well, if you're the Packers, now you have to manage it for one more year. How do they best do that moving forward, considering all the things that have happened and the personalities and the emotions that are involved, but then also just strategically in order to ensure that Jordan Love is actually ready next year, right? Like, there are a number of reps that they're going to want to give him this season during practices. I mean, they need to get him ready if he's going to be their franchise quarterback, especially one that's going to take over for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, good grief, you better be good.
Yeah, well, as you say that, I'm thinking, like the picture I posted on Twitter, I'm thinking of him taking over for Brett Favre. You know, and that's instructive because we had longer off seasons last, you know, that time without the CBA and all that. And Brett used to stay in Mississippi, whatever. That was his thing. So we saw Aaron for 2 off seasons. We really did. I remember it so well. He ran the team. You know, and that offseason, like I said, was 8, 9, 10 weeks. And Greg Jennings and James Jones and Donald Driver coming up to our offices and like, this kid's real. Like, this kid is real. And we'd go out to practice and he'd hit Greg Jennings on an 80-yard route in stride. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, Ted Thompson locked eyes one time. Like, we got the guy. And we felt comfortable turning the team over to him. What they've seen from Love has been somewhat similar this offseason. I know these offseasons are truncated now, but they've seen it. And now they're going to see it in August. They're going to see it the entire August. I don't know what Aaron's going to do for the next month, because I don't think he'll practice much. I mean, he doesn't need it.
Are you hearing similar things out of Green Bay that they do have? I mean, I know we're hearing some of that publicly, right? Like, yeah, Jordan Love, he looks great, but you always hear that.
Yeah.
Like, are you hearing that from people really, that behind the scenes they actually are impressed and that they think they have the next guy, that they've seen enough that they believe that?
No, I mean, I think what I hear is there's going to be some wow moments and there's going to be some down moments. You know, he's a young guy, but he's huge, 6'5", whatever, and he's big arm. And then you go back to, you know, people on different networks in 2020 saying he should be a top 10 pick. You know, it's like we're going to relive all that at some point. But the managed part with Aaron is going to be interesting because I don't, you know, we talk about, hey, the Packers won. I don't think this is going to be easy still. I don't. Aaron is a star. I've said this a lot. And the Packers are not the best with stars. Like, the Packers are kind of like this football factory. You know, it's great. You don't have an owner taking money to different interests and yachts and boats and whatever, but you have everything's poured back.
What are you talking about there, Andrew?
We're talking about the Packers. You know, I lived it for 10 years. It's just this kind of everything's football. And the people that run it are football guys. But in my day, we had Ted Thompson. He was elite talent evaluator, but he was not a communicator, you know. So he used me, he used Reggie McKenzie, he used John Schneider, John Dorsey. We're talking to the agents, we're talking to the players, we're the communicators. I don't know if they have that now. You know, Brian is a Ted disciple. He's all about scouting, which all these guys are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Russ Ball is kind of a football guy who does what I used to do, the contracts and everything. Yeah, Mark Murphy, football guy, deference to football, loves Brian. You know, I don't feel like Aaron has that voice in there. Like he used to just come and plop himself on our couches and all that. I don't know if he's got that. And I don't know if he's going to be comfortable just kind of being one of 53 there. So they're going to have to handle him. You know, in other words, Aaron is A-list. Aaron is with Tom Brady. It's the top. He's the top, right? If you talk about the stars of the NFL, he's there. Haircut, whatever. So they're going to have to do a little differently. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean personnel? I don't know. You know, I don't know if he's going to say which receivers to keep, but I just think it's a little bit more nebulous than that.
Maybe he just wants to say on when they kick and when they go for it.
Maybe. I don't discount that. I think there's going to be some, you know, we saw he's been to the championship 2 years in a row, Matt LaFleur, but you saw more comfort last year than you did in 2019. And I think that's Aaron kind of, you know, they're massaging a little bit of their egos. And there's got to be even more than that this year.
Let me ask you this, because you touched on it a little bit earlier. You said it was a whole other podcast, but let's try to like, I'm interested to get some thoughts on this. If Aaron Rodgers can't get this done, right? And if you look around at anyone who would have leverage in the NFL, it's Aaron Rodgers
right
now, coming off of the year in Green Bay, for crying out loud. Like, if he can't get it, what needs to happen in the NFL? What changes need to happen for a player to have the leverage to actually get this done in the way that you alluded to? In the NBA, we've seen James Harden. We've seen players force trades. What's the difference?
People ask me all offseason, why can't this happen? I'm like, he's not James Harden. You know, it's
which is crazy because he's so much better than James Harden in his sport than James Harden is in his.
I mean, I referenced it earlier with the free agency thing. Listen, I just wrote about this for Sports Illustrated. I just think that player empowerment, we're not there. And why aren't we there? Well, one is superstars don't get to free agency, because teams are smart about locking them up because there's the franchise tag.
Is it the tag?
Tag is a big part of it, because when you negotiate, as I did for so many years, you know, the agent can say to you, you know, he's a free agent next year. And you can say, not really.
Yeah. You know, not for several years, because I could tag him for two.
We have this management weapon. And the only time they can come back is say, well, you got this other star player. So you got to, you know, pick which one's going to be the tag. But you have that. And, you know, Russell Wilson came close a couple years ago. He was moments from going into his last year before they got him signed up. And I talked to his agent. I'm like, come on, you could have been the guy. And he's like, yeah, but they had the tag. They had the tag, you know, like, you know, it's Deshaun Watson, who wanted out, still wants out. He signed a long-term deal like 4 months ago. So these are the kind of things. And I just think that we're in a league, as great as these superstars are, they're one of 11 on the field, and it's just not there. Maybe one day. I talked about the quarterback carousel of 2021. That was the alleged quarterback carousel.
It never happened.
Matthew Stafford got out because of mutual. They kind of came, you know, kind of ran its course. He was kind of like J.J. Watt. But the one guy who got out was the worst quarterback in the league last year, Carson Wentz. And he got out because of they had an option in Hurts, and he had a willing suitor in Frank Reich. I mean, I just think that the media, you know, it's good to play this up, but the teams still have the power. They really do. And I'm not sure what's going to change that. You know, we can get into bigger issues of collective bargaining. And I know I was critical last year of the new agreement, but it's just where we are in the NFL. We're still at a place where the teams have the power.
You mentioned Deshaun Watson. That story has changed, interestingly, in the last week, now that it shifted to him showing up. And it feels like tonally the coverage has shifted back to the part of the story before any of the legal stuff came in, which was that he didn't want to play for the Texans. Yeah. I feel like in some way we've kind of forgotten that aspect of it because it seems so clear that he won't be able to play for the Texans in the near future for legal purposes. From a legal standpoint, when do you see that possibly taking a turn and us maybe pivoting back to does he want to play or not because the legal stuff or whether or not a team could start looking at trading for him? Like, what is the earliest that you see that playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I've been obviously immersed with Aaron, so I don't know if there's anything new, but Lindsay, I don't see how he plays.
The whole year.
Whether Texans or anyone else. And again, I'm not sure about all year, but I'm a lawyer. I look at precedent. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben Roethlisberger, 6-game suspension for something happened with a woman in a bathroom, but no criminal charges. Ezekiel Elliott, 6 games, something happened with a former girlfriend or whatever she was, but no criminal charges. 6 games. And now we have 22 complaints and I think some criminal complaints. So again, I'm looking at precedent, and those guys got 6 games. I know Roethlisberger is reduced to 4, but I'm like, how does this guy play? At least before November. Like, how? What am I missing? So forget about whether he wants to be there, whether the Eagles would offer 3 number 1s. I'm like, how? Like, how does this happen? And then, of course, the backlash if he does play from every woman's group that would obviously protest this. Yeah.
To me, that almost, even once you get past the legal stuff and whether he legally can, because if there's one thing I've learned is not to expect the NFL teams or the league to just do the right thing as far as that's concerned, a lot of time, I think my cynicism is starting to win out as far as that's concerned, but it would be a PR nightmare, right? Like, I don't understand how you could bring him in, especially in a trade situation where you're willingly going out and actively embracing somebody who's in this current predicament and saying like, hey, women that are our fans, he's really good at football. Like, I don't know how you do that.
Well, the 2014 season was a kind of obviously the Ray Rice video, but what happened like weeks after the Ray Rice video, if you remember, Adrian Peterson hitting his kid and Greg Hardy hitting his girlfriend, they were put on this list that the NFL brought out of cobwebs called the Commissioner Exemplis, was used for a totally different thing back in the day. I remember it. And they said, these guys are going to get paid, but we're going to park them. Because as one senior exec at the NFL told me at the time, as I was covering it for ESPN, he said, listen, there's no way in God's green earth we can put these guys on the field. Yeah. You know, we'll pay them, but go away. It seems to me we're there again. But like you just said, like the NFL's like, oh no, we're not putting on commissioner exempt, or maybe I read that wrong, or maybe we're going to wait. What? He's going to practice and play preseason? What? I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. But, you know, you talk about trade, everyone's looking for an angle. You know, I'm sure Howie Roseman's looking for an angle. Hey, I can get this guy instead of 3 number 1s. Now I can get him for 1 because of this thing hanging over his head.
Yep.
People are going to act that way.
Yeah, I'm seeing that in fantasy drafts, right? I'm a big fantasy football player. And you're seeing people make that. It's like, at what point can you not pass on him anymore? You know, do you have to roll the dice because the upside is so high So I would imagine that teams are in the exact same situation, except obviously on a much larger scale. I want to get your quick take on the vaccination stuff that's happening, because the NFL, that is quickly changing. The NFL putting out their policy or announcing it last week that games not played due to outbreaks resulting from unvaccinated players will be forfeited with no pay for players on either team. Legally, are there any issues with this? What can we anticipate as we go further down this road?
Yeah, I mean, again, we talked about the player empowerment thing a lot on this podcast. This is the NFL flexing again. I mean, it's just like, hey, we can't mandate it. I'm a lawyer. And now there are schools. I have kids going to school. I teach at a school that are mandating it. Mm-hmm. But the NFL is saying, we're not going to deal with those legal challenges. We're not going to mandate, but we're going to make life very difficult for the unvaccinated. And how does that mean? Well, COVID outbreaks for unvaccinated, you're not paid. And the team you play against is not paid. Now, think about the peer pressure in locker rooms from that. It's kind of a divide and conquer. And we've already seen it. Cole Beasley's done his stuff, but other Buffalo Bills players are tweeting the other way. And, you know, it's like, whoa.
Stephon Diggs.
Right. And Jerry Hughes. And I'm looking at that and saying, right, okay, the NFL's divide and conquer strategy here. And then I read about wristbands, like the unvaccinated wristbands are a different color. And then J.C. Trotter, the union, says we didn't agree to that.
Very so, Hester Prynne.
Yes. I'm like, so what they're going to do is make it difficult. Now we see the numbers going up, right? So 90% teams are going up, 80% teams are going up. So I think...
Yeah, Tom Pelissero reporting Tuesday that 85% of the NFL's players have received at least one vaccination shot. And that's up from 80% just last Friday. Wow. So the numbers are going up fairly quickly. I wonder how much of that has to do with this applied pressure.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing I'll say about that, which is an obvious point, but sometimes people don't get it. It's all talent, you know, it's like,
yes,
Josh Sweat and Najee Harris and DeAndre Hopkins, they can say all they want. But if they down the roster players, like, hey, I'm not down with vaccination, they're like, okay, you're out. And I've talked to agents, like they're, you know, tryout guys. Are they vaccinated? No, sorry. You know, so the lower the talent, the lower the tolerance. And think about cutdown day in the end of August and teams like tied on, you know, this fourth safety versus that fourth safety, this sixth receiver versus one of them's vaccinated. Oh, yeah. Take that guy. Now, they'll never say it, but that's what happens.
Do you anticipate once cuts are made that the percentage of players on a team that are vaccinated will go up or down?
Up.
Up.
But again, the stars will not get cut, you know.
Well, see, that's why I want that's why I ask, because some of the uncuttable players will inevitably be unvaccinated.
Right.
So I wonder if it's possible it even goes down, because
that's a good point.
Some of those players down there.
Assuming that the lower level players realize what I just said.
Yes.
And they're all vaccinated. You're right. That could go differently. You're right.
Which really does say something about the stance, right? I mean, if you feel like you can afford to take the stance, that's when you take the stance. And if you don't.
Yeah. I mean, again,
do what you have to do.
We don't need to talk politics, but, and I get that, guys, I'm that way too. I'm an athlete. I'm a triathlete. Like, everything goes in your body is like a sacred. I get it. But I also know my body's full of vaccines. You know, way before COVID. So sometimes you got to think about what's already happened to your body in terms of that area.
What does the team need to do in terms of making those cuts legally to protect themselves? If there is a player so there are players that, like you mentioned, are at the bottom and you're trying to decide between this guy or that guy, and it's pretty close and it seems obviously pretty close. And then you go with the vaccinated player. We all can get on board with that understanding and how you could make that happen. If you're cutting a player, like if Cole Beasley gets cut, let's say, that's a player that I wouldn't have anticipated to be cut for any other reason. So it would be clear that something that was hurting his status with the team was his stance on the vaccination. Does that present a problem for the team potentially from a legal standpoint?
I'm going to say no, because when if you pick up the wire every day, there's depending on 1 to 50 players getting released from the NFL. And there are no explanations. I mean, I know, you know, having been around the Packers 10 years, cutting 100 players a year over the course of the year, we never had to give explanations. You know, it's like, I think it's the silent part or the loud part, whatever the phrase is, left unsaid. And it's the same thing that's going on with these tryouts. And that is the reason. But teams probably aren't even saying that. When I talked to an agent that said, yeah, team asked, is the player unvaccinated? Agent said, he is unvaccinated. Team said, we'll be back to you, when they never call, you know, like they ghost you. But I don't think there's going to be legal recourse. I don't.
Andrew Brandt, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Pleasure. Enjoyed talking to you. And for those who don't get it, I started this newsletter a couple months ago, so it's doing well. You sign up at andrew-brandt.com.
Right, good stuff. And while you're signing up for that, go ahead and follow Andrew on Twitter also. It's just his name, Andrew Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T. No relation to Kyle. Or is there a relation to Kyle? I should have asked. Had my moment. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app. Free for most subscribers. You just download it today. You tap podcast. My Twitter handle's @Lindsay_Rhodes. On Instagram, it's LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. And a special thanks goes out to SiriusXM's senior vice president of sports programming and podcasting, Steve Cohen. And I'll see you guys again next week with so much to talk about, because football is back! Woo!
SiriusXM Podcasts.